Hey, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, all the ships at sea, welcome to the St. Louis United Saturday Show. Edmundo here, joined by a cast of thousands on the first post-ecliptic episode of this show. Here's your host, the one and only Mr. Tom Schwarz.
I was just going to leave you out on that cliff for a while.
I was trying to make up a word here that I don't know what it is.
You should write it out sometime. Nah, you should try writing it out before you say it.
Thank you.
Indeed, Tom Schwarz here yet again, our last day maybe out west, banishment, like, you know.
40 years in the wilderness.
40 years in the wilderness. Moses might be leading us out. Ted, what do you think?
I'm hopeful.
I'm hopeful too. Josh McGee in again. What's up, Josh?
What's up, guys? Waiting for you guys to come closer to my neck of the woods.
Tell me about it, man. Tell me about it. And once again, all the way from New Zealand, not Old
Memphis,
Zealand.
Not Memphis.
Not Memphis. Russell Bly. Russell, how are you?
Good, thanks. How are you guys?
You're going to have scores for us a little later, right?
Absolutely.
Okay, but guess what? I am really excited because today we have a guest that I was thinking about this, Ted. You got to leave George Vesey out of it, right? Because George has been with us so many times and he's just like, you almost got to look at him as part of the show almost, right? Okay. So that leaves me thinking about top guests. Top two guests of all time, Anson Dorrance and the lady on the phone, Gwendolyn Oxenham.
Woo!
Gwendolyn, are you there? Is she there?
Hello?
Hello, Gwendolyn, are you there? You are there.
Yeah, I am. Thanks for having me.
Oh, man, very excited. Now, we get to talk to you today because you got a new book out, right?
Yes, I do.
Well, before we talk about your new book, do you mind if I go on a little bit about Pallotta, the movie, and your, what was the name of your other book?
Finding the Game.
Finding the Game, which was the inside story about the movie. If you have not seen the movie Pallotta, someone ought to just slap you because you've just wake up because you got to, this remains. I was thinking about this on the way out here. It remains one of my favorite movies I've ever seen.
I'm glad.
Tell us just a little bit about Pallotta, the movie.
Sure, yeah. So we went to 25 countries looking for pickup games, just informal games, and using those games as a window into other cultures around the world. So we played with prisoners in Bolivia and moonshine brewers in Kenya and women in hijab in Iran. And it was an unforgettable experience and made you feel really good about the whole world.
And you and your now husband and the father of your children, Luke, correct?
Yes.
Went on the, who is, I was thinking, I mean, this we finally hooked up with you again because of your new book, which we'll get to shortly. But it just brought back all these memories about, you know, you did a showing of the movie here, New Dimensions. Tom Mickler was involved, and it was a lot of fun. So we got to know you, and you just got a phenomenal story. I mean, you know, you throw off like, oh yeah, we went to 25 countries. But you see this movie, and it's like, no, you went to 25 totally different worlds almost, right?
It is insane how varied and how wide the spectrum is of people who all love one same game. So, you know, when we were on a rooftop in Tokyo playing with businessmen, and then we were on a garbage dump in a slum in Kenya, and, you know, the intensity and love was present in everywhere.
I can't tell you how often I refer to that game. Tell me briefly about the game where Luke actually played, right? In the game with the Brewers in, where was it, Nairobi?
Yeah, in Mathari Valley, which is the oldest slum in Africa. It's right outside of Nairobi. And basically every Saturday they bet 30 shillings and have these incredibly intense tournaments where the whole slum gathers around the sideline and watches. I played in that too, but my team lost early while Luke made it to the finals.
To the final. It was like pickup ball max, but I guess it wasn't really pickup ball because those guys were actual teams, right?
Well, informal teams.
Oh,
but
okay.
What makes it so intense is that by playing in that tournament, you've given up a day's wages. So not they don't just want to win for pride. I mean, they need the money too. So it was definitely the most intense game of my life. More intense than the Bolivian prison.
Which was unbelievable. A prison where the prisoners run the prison. In order to get in, you guys had to negotiate with the mafia, the prison mafia, to get in, right? And then they were your security once you were in, correct?
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, guys who are in a prison, that's all they had to do all day. So they were really good. And, it was certainly memorable.
Okay, before we jump to the new book, you also had two incredible things happen in your life. You now have two children, correct?
I do, yeah. Two little boys, a 4-year-old and a 1-year-old.
4 and 1, wow. Nothing like nothing like adding the second kid. My feeling about there's no bigger letter in the English language than the S that you add to kid when you get kids. And it's just a whole new life, right?
True. It is. I'm speechless about it, actually.
Okay, let's talk about the new book. First, what's the title?
Under the Lights and in the Dark, Untold Stories of Women's Soccer.
Wendell, this is Ted. What were you trying, what was the concept of the book? What were you trying to share with the readers?
Sure. So I played for Santos, women's team, the professional soccer in Brazil. And, you know, this was home to Pelé. And there was a day where I was hitchhiking to practice, which is what we always did. We always hitchhiked to practice. The field was 45 minutes away if you walked. And I remember one day sitting with my thumb out, thinking, like, here I am playing for the most storied football club in Brazilian history, and I'm hitchhiking to practice, and that kind of blew my mind, and it just occurred to me that no one has any idea what it's like to be a professional woman soccer anywhere practically beside the U.S. I mean, who knows what it's like to play professional women soccer in, say, Nigeria? So what I wanted to do was find out. I mean, you hear so much about inequality in women's soccer, but what I was really interested in was the stories that kind of rise out of that inequality, and so that's what I went hunting for. It was like a big scavenger hunt to see who I could talk to and what stories I could find.
So that period in your life was approximately, what, 2005?
Yes.
Okay.
I think that's it exactly. It was only a couple of months, but it was just long enough to make me wonder about women's soccer all over the world.
Yeah, Marta had emerged during the 2003 World Cup, and so she was starting to make it a bit of an impact on the Brazilian landscape. But I guess describe culturally how women's football was viewed back then, 12 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't a thing. When I would tell people on the plane or in the taxi that I played for Santos, I mean, no one knew Santos had a women's team. They'd never heard of women playing football. I would ask everyone about Marta because I will never forget watching her when she was 17 years old. I think it was the 2003 World Cup. And she was insane. I'd never seen anything like it. Yet in Brazil, they weren't watching. They had never heard of her. And I ate rice and beans for lunch and dinner. I lost 20 pounds. I looked anorexic. We trained 8 hours a day. My teammates were all from favelas, and, their families wanted them to quit because they could make more money being a maid or working at a toy factory than they could make being professional soccer players. We wore extra-large hand-me-downs from the men's team. We were never allowed to play in the men's stadium, and no one came to our games. I mean, it was completely empty, yet my teammates could juggle the ball on their shins. So they were. I didn't know if they would be any good because of all of the machismo in the culture and whether they would have had access to the game. But they all grew up playing on the street with their brothers and other neighborhood boys, and they were much, much better than me, although I could outrun them.
So if you pull this story or this particular timeline to the States, this would have been about 6 years removed from the 99ers. The WSA had folded, and so now women's football is looking to kind of regenerate itself. And, you know, there's varied interest and support levels all over the world. So throughout these last dozen years, there's been so many players that have had to juggle their dream of playing professionally with their personal and employment lives, correct?
Correct.
So tell us a few of the stories that you chronicled in the book without giving away too much.
Oh, sure. So I have one chapter called Beyond the Field, and it looks at pursuits off the field. So there's kind of two different fields for that. One, I looked at all of these amazing number one players who ended up retiring at age 23, even though they were the best at what they did. So I look at what they're doing now and how soccer informs their new life or doesn't inform it, how crazily different it is or similar, and that goes from surgeons to CFOs to a woman who works at Amazon now. But then I also look at the players who are still playing while also growing a new dream. So there's a woman on the German national team who is also a police officer. Nadia Nadim is semesters away from being a surgeon, and she's also the star of the Danish national team, and she also learned how to play soccer at refugee camp after her father was executed by the Taliban. So there's a wide range. And I think, you know, what's unique about women's soccer is that none of us grew up thinking that we could be a soccer player. I mean, we loved to play and we knew we wanted to play, but there wasn't an option of being a soccer player as a job. So we all had alternate pursuits, alternate dreams, and I think that creates really well-rounded people who have an afterlife after the game.
So what was yours when you were growing up?
What was my dream?
Yeah.
To be a writer.
Well, I was hoping that's what you would answer, because that leads to my next comment. Because you really are a terrific writer. Anyone who's read the book, I mean, I haven't read this book yet. I will be. Your other book, it's especially when you tie it with a movie, it's like an added dimension to, you know, you've seen and experienced. You have all these visuals to build off of, and then your book was so well written that it took you to another dimension. And that's,
oh, thank you.
So you really, where did you learn? Okay, you wanted to be a writer. Where did you learn to write?
In third grade, I wrote about my pet rock for a class assignment, and I read a whole lot of I read a lot of R.L. Stine books, and then I would basically copy his storyline and write my own.
Who?
Very, very, very similar stories. And then,
Hold on. Whose books?
The author of Goosebumps.
R.L. Stine, Goosebumps. The Goosebumps.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry, I don't know.
He wrote like adolescent horror books.
Yeah. Oh, okay, great. Well, you didn't make it in that genre. Fortunately, you didn't follow in that genre too long. Okay, so that puts you at like your maybe teenage years. So you go to school?
Yeah.
Is your degree in writing and literature, or?
Yep, English. I love to read, and then I it was English and documentary studies, and then I went to grad school at Notre Dame for creative writing.
Ah, and did anybody stand out there that you can say, "Oh yeah, this person helped me over a hurdle," or, you know?
sure. I mean, yeah, I had awesome professors at Notre Dame. Valerie Sayers and William O'Rourke were my two mentors who really, you know, believed in me. And at Duke, Tom Rankin, Donna Lisker, Gary were my documentary study and writing gurus who just showed me what was possible.
Documentary writing, so like that, and I didn't think about that. So you wrote the screenplay for Pallotta?
Yeah, I mean, as much as documentaries have screenplays, we have more. It's kind of more of a storyboard where you write what you hope the screenplay will be, but then you get out there and the Mennonites say, no, we don't play here, and then you have to start from scratch.
But so you not only, I mean, you had to go in that. It never even occurred to me, I'm sorry, that would be a subset of, I would just think of writers as writers, but, you know, obviously you're telling a story differently if it's just on the page as opposed to if it's in the other media, right?
Yeah,
I just learned something.
It's an interesting interplay between the two. I mean, the way images inform words and words inform imagery.
Well, okay, here, this leads me to this question, may or may not have been asked. Do you see any overlap in the mentors that you had at your writing skill, your considerable writing skills, and your soccer mentors?
Overlap in terms of lessons
like,
they taught me?
Yeah, like, not the people, obviously, but yeah, like, what did, you know, how do you get to be you as a player, and then how do you get to be you as a writer, I guess is what I'm asking, which are probably impossible questions, but...
No, I think that, I mean, it's an easy answer, and that they all taught you that the only thing that matters is if you love it, and that's for writing and soccer, and you can't care about sort of achievement or you'll die unhappy, basically. Where, you know, with soccer, you can't, you know, it feels just as good to try hard and play well, even if there isn't a coach or a stadium of watching, so long as you know, like, you loved it, you tried. And I love, like, trying. And then with writing, it's the same thing. I mean, when you get lost on the page, it's worth it. When you believe in the story, you've got to write for that and not for the hope that your book will one day be a bestseller. I mean, you can't do it for recognition. You have to do it because you love it. Because, you know, most writers, I mean, I definitely lost money writing this book once you factor in childcare.
Yeah,
who knows if it'll break out or not, but I believe in the stories, and like, it meant a lot to me writing it, and that, I guess, is all that really matters.
Gwendolyn, as we wrap this up today, tell me a little bit about your feelings about the state of the game. I know you follow the NWSL. I know you're watching the Euros. I saw some of your posts about the fervent celebrations by Denmark, or excuse me, by the Netherlands, in the Netherlands, related to the Euros championship on their home soil. Just share with our listeners a little bit about how you're feeling about the state of the women's game.
You know, it's really inspiring, the fact that NWSL nearly doubled the starting salary. It is no longer the heartbreakingly low, like $6,800 starting salary. And the fervor that happened in the U.S. in 1999 has now spread globally, and these other countries are having their 1999 moment where, you know, in Holland, after they won Euros, the entire country was bright orange and doing ticker tape parades in the canals and watching. Every single person in the country practically was watching, and that is really exciting. And now the big challenge is whether the national team interest, if we can figure out how to make it seep down into the pro league so that women can actually make a career out of the game.
Sure. All right, so let's talk about where we can get the book. I know that you told me that you'd like to encourage people to look at their local independent bookstore. It's also available at Amazon. And I also mentioned that I'm going to be reading the book from my local library, which, when I heard about the book, I asked the St. Louis Public Library to order a copy. So it's on reserve for me as soon as it's made available, and I'll be reading it as the first person checking it out. So encourage people that might be listening on the pod no matter what community you live in, if you're not a person who generally buys books, ask your library to order it. It's another sale for Gwendolyn, and it spreads the word perhaps to some kids or some families that maybe don't know about these stories of women soccer players.
Or it makes a great gift.
It does.
Gwendolyn, thank you so much. Hopefully it won't be so long that we speak to you the next time, because it is always a joy. I love following you on Facebook. Your kids are the wrong word. They're adorbs. I was told that's what it is. And our love to you and your family. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you guys so much. I love talking to you guys. Your drive room is awesome. I really appreciate you having me on the show.
Well, you're the best. Thanks a lot, Gwendolyn Oxenham. Buy the book.
Buy the book. Thanks, Gwendolyn.
Talk to you guys soon.
And are we going to step away for a moment here?
Yeah, we're going to go to break.
We're going to go to break.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's your job, remember?
I'm thrown off because of the music that I had set out to play for all this is not here, so I'm not blaming it. You jumped in.
Edmundo, they...
hours and hours
of
work last night. And
what are we listening to? Pallotta. We're listening to the...
Pallotta.
I'm telling you what. See this. Pallotta is a phenomenal... I mean, if you're a soccer fan... You just can't see a better movie than
Google
this.
Google Pallotta, P-E-L-A-D-A, space.
I love that song.
Hulu. You can watch it for free.
Yeah.
90
and
minutes.
If you don't fall in love with Gwendolyn and Luke, there's something wrong
Pallotta,
with it.
Pallotta, space, Hulu.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, stay where you are. We will be right back after these brief announcements. Once again, you're listening to the St. Louis United Soccer Saturday Show, brought to you by our good friends at ADK Wealth Advisors, the place to go if you need some smart financial advice.
Like maybe if you want to buy a Jaguar.
You want to buy a Jaguar in your later years? That's how you do
that's
it.
What
it.
Yeah. And you know what we'll do is we'll come back with scores. We've got to run a bunch of ads here because of that delicious time with Gwendolyn. But then I'll come back with score. You ready?
I'm ready.
All right, cool.
We will be back with the voice of the Empire, Professor Russell Blythe, after these brief announcements.
For the World Cup here in 2010.
یا آقا با یه دونه خانم بازی کنه همه تعجب میکنه مثلا الان هم اگه کسی رد میشدن بد میدونن که مثلا خانم بخواد با آقا بازی کنه
بازی کنم.